It could be the pitch for a Hollywood screenplay. A young Iowa couple sells their house, buys a sailboat, and lives on it together for months. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today we catch up with Denise and Grant Staskel, the young couple from North Liberty who pitched their former lives overboard last year to sail the Pacific. We'll find out, among other things, what it's like to trade your house for a sailboat.
Maybe go into your smallest bathroom and put a bunch of your belongings in there and see if you can stay in there for a week.
Taking a dramatic new tack on life after this news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, it could be a pitch for a Hollywood screenplay. A young couple ditches their former lives. They sell their house. They leave their jobs. They buy a sailboat and live on it together for months, sailing from port to port in the Pacific. And then what happens, you say? Well, that's what we're going to find out this hour. When last we spoke with Denise and Grant Staskel, formerly of North Liberty, Iowa, last year at about this time, they were making plans to do just that, to escape their former lives, to chuck the routines, to sell their house, and to trade it in for a life of sailing as vagabonds. In fact, that's what their blog is titled, if you'd like to check it out. vagabondingundersail.org. And now they're back in Iowa for a visit after an absence of a year. Grant and Denise Staskel, welcome back to our studio.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Glad to be here.
And it's been a year since you've been in Iowa. How does it feel to be back?
Chilly.
And very cold.
Well, you've been traversing the coast of Southern California, so that comment doesn't surprise me. Before we talk about the journey that you've taken here on your sailboat, remind us of how this whole idea got started.
Well, I encouraged my husband to get a hobby, and he ended up choosing sailing. And from there, it just kind of grew. We started out with dinghies. We ended up just increasing our skills. Grant took a captain's class in Florida, and from there, we just kind of moved from dinghies to bigger boats. And about 2 years ago, we decided to become 100% debt-free, and from there, we kind of launched this idea, what's next? And
right.
So we...
And we have to say, you're a young couple. You've been married, what, 4 years?
Yes.
4 years, and
yeah.
And you're in your 30s?
33.
Okay, yeah. So you've got a life, a lot ahead of you. So you're asking yourself in your early 30s, what next? So what happened there, Denise?
We went ahead and kind of, you know, romanticized about this idea about buying a boat and living on it. And we, you know, read a bunch of people's blogs and kind of, you know, got inspired from that. And so we went ahead and just kind of said, let's just do it.
When you read those blogs of other people, what was it that inspired you? What tipped it?
For, I think, both of us, it was exploring new cultures and the chance to see something new and interact with people in a new way. And
it's not that you were running away from something here in Iowa.
No.
No.
You both are native Iowans. You come from the Dubuque area?
Yes.
And you're from the Cedar Rapids area?
Yes.
Grant,
yes.
Yeah. Okay, good. Now, of course, there's nothing to run away from in Iowa, is there?
There's not.
Not except the winters.
Very good point. So tell us, over the last few months, where have you been sailing?
We currently are around the corner from the Baja Peninsula in La Paz, Mexico. And so we've been sailing around Cabo San Lucas and then Cabo's smaller, more artsy brother, San Jose del Cabo, Mexico, which is just east of Cabo San Lucas. And then La Paz is northeast of those two towns.
Mm-hmm. So this long peninsula that stretches out from Southern California into Mexico, the Baja California, and in there. And then as far north as where did you sail?
La Paz, Mexico.
Okay. You're off the coast of California, though, too, at some points.
Yeah, we started from Ventura, and we, from there, have visited the Channel Islands, and then from there we've gone to Catalina Island and then to San Diego. And from San Diego, we joined a rally, the Baja Haha, and we then cruised down past the Baja Peninsula, stopping in two little tiny villages, Bahia Santa Maria and Las Tortugas.
Yes, Turtle Bay.
Turtle Bay.
Okay, tell us about the craft. Let me see if I get the pronunciation right, because it is a Hawaiian name, Maluhia.
It means peacefulness in Hawaiian.
And how is she? She's at port where right now?
La Paz.
In La Paz, okay. And describe Maluhia to us.
She is a 37-foot single-mast sailboat, and it's a boat that is uniquely designed for offshore passage making, and so in many ways it's overbuilt and designed specifically for long passages at sea.
It's a very beautiful boat. It's like if you saw it in person, it's a canoe stern, so it looks kind of like a canoe when you see it. So it's not as wide as most boats, which is better in some ways because it's very comfortable under sail.
What does that mean, comfortable under sail?
It's not sliding down off waves. Sometimes boats that are a little more beamier will get lifted up on a wave and then slide sideways down a wave because they don't have a large underbody, which this boat is very strong and sturdy. And I think after doing these passages, it just kind of like reaffirmed our choice in a boat because, you know, we just kind of seen how well it performs. And
you made the right choice, Grant, in the boat.
Yeah, so I was just going to add to that you sort of feel like you're out of control in the wrong conditions. And with our boat, we've never had that sensation. And we've heard from other folks who have our boat that even in some of the nastiest seas and weather, you still don't have that sensation. And it's almost not quite fun in those conditions.
Mm-hmm. So how much living space is on Maluhia? We've got the deck above, so we got 37 feet long, and then we go down below deck. We have a galley. This is your living room, your kitchen/bedroom, right?
Yes.
And we want to say we'll have some pictures of your boat, and we'll have a link to your blog where you have lots of pictures to get a picture of the boat and all the places where you and Maluhia have been over the past few months. Are we talking about sort of a living space the size of a garage?
No.
Not that
big.
Smaller.
That's even bigger. If you want to get a sensation for what it's like living on the boat, maybe go into your smallest bathroom and put a bunch of your belongings in there and see if you can stay in there for a week. You know, there has to be a way to cook meals and stuff like that, obviously. But I would describe it more as the size of a small dorm room.
A very cluttered dorm room.
It's not that cluttered. I mean, everything has a place and everything has a purpose.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
How did you make the transition in adapting to this new life on the water from a house in Iowa, in North Liberty?
Well, first of all, we had to get rid of a bunch of stuff. And it's surprising how much stuff one collects over years. I think it has to do with the amount of space that you have. The more space you have, the more stuff you have, because you feel like you have to fill it up. I don't know what it is about
humans.
Yes. We just right. have this notion to have to fill it up. But so we went through a bunch of our stuff and sold it. And we do still have a storage unit, which we're kind of afraid to even look at. We haven't looked at it in over a year. And we kind of have thoughts of just calling someone up and saying, hey, go ahead and take it.
You found out that there are a lot of things in life, possessions we have, we don't need.
Absolutely.
No. And I think more possessions just brings more stress. Because there's this, for some reason, I found like living on the boat, I guess one of the most surprising things for me was how easy it was to adapt to the space. Even though it is a smaller space, I just found it really easy to adapt to, and it's very comfortable. At first, you know, you try to figure out how to make things work. It's just a more simpler way of living.
Mm-hmm. Denise Stasekull is with us, along with her husband, Grant Stasekull, originally from North Liberty. Last year at this time, bought a boat, and turn to the life of vagabonds under sail. They've spent many months living together on their boat, going from port to port, sailing along the coast, the west coast of the United States in the Pacific. And let's get into a little bit of the adventures that you've had. So you, Denise, have been such a good writer here. I've enjoyed consuming your blog here, the photos combined with your text here. I wonder if you could pick a passage out of your blog and tell us a little bit about it and maybe read some from the passage.
Sure. I'll start with the first overnight that we spent in Santa Cruz. You know, it was our first anchoring out with our boat overnight. I don't know if it was because it was our first overnight with our anchor in this boat or if it was because I actually figured out a pattern to the swell that was rocking our boat forward and backward, then side to side, in sets of threes. But I couldn't sleep. Maybe it was because our first overnight came with the introduction of new noises to the boat. The stove was rattling, halyards inside the mast echoing, and books on the bookshelves thumping. Once about every couple hours, I'd poke my head out and check our position in regards to the other boats and our GPS. Every time, the result was the same. So what was my deal? We hadn't budged an inch. We fixed the noises as best we could, and after some convincing, I was able to trust that the boat, its 45-pound anchor and chain, were just fine.
Mm-hmm. So, Grant, how do you remember that first anchorage off of Ventura, 20 miles out to sea?
I remember it being crowded, and a good anchorage for me is one where we have it to ourselves. If something goes wrong, we don't worry about it.
Not in a cluster of other boats.
Not in a cluster of other boats. So if something goes wrong with us, we don't drag into another boat and cause a problem. And if someone next to us isn't doing their due diligence, they don't drag into us after we've done all the hard work of securing our boat.
Mm-hmm. So even though you're anchored, you're not necessarily still in the boat. The boat is constantly moving around. You're just, you know, the bow is connected to the anchor, which is, you know, set in the ground, but your boat can pivot around that at 360 degrees.
Were you tuned into these sounds, these new sounds? It's like having a new old house that you're listening for creaks and groans and moans?
Yes, yes. And the first time we were out, the sounds were all new. And so each one individually, we'd think, what the heck
we'd
is that?
We'd have to investigate each individual noise to make sure that it was, you know, what we could determine what it was so that we could either fix it, like the books, taking the books off the shelf, the rattling of the stove. I think we shoved a cushion underneath of it.
Over time, all of the sounds you sort of tune out and get used to. After a while, only new sounds have that moment of, what the heck is that?
Mm-hmm. After that first anchorage, how were you deciding what was your course? Did you have that planned out weeks or months in advance, or just like the term vagabonds would suggest, whatever moves you?
Whatever moves us.
Whatever moves us. We,
oh, nice.
We don't like the word plan. We always say ideas. So we have ideas for like where we'd like to go or what we'd like to do. Mm-hmm. And if those ideas fall into place, then we will act on those ideas and go ahead and do whatever we feel.
Mm-hmm. So someone would have an idea and you'd talk about it a little bit
and
generally come to an agreement? Or
yes,
yep.
We'd come to an agreement rather quickly.
Uh-huh. You mentioned earlier that you were in it was an event called the Baja Haha.
Yes.
What was that?
It's a cruising rally for sailboats. They do it every year. And along with us, about 200 other boats signed up. So basically, you can start from the main starting point is San Diego, but other people had started from Ensenada to join the rally. So as we make our way down to Cabo, more boats had joined. Some boats dropped off, type of thing. But it's basically a
cruising rally. Rally. It's not a race, or is it a race?
It's not an official race, but as you know, when you get a couple boats together, it quickly can turn into a race more often than
exactly.
not.
So
when you're sailing alone, and quite different than being in a rally like this, what is the fun of being in a rally full of other sailboats?
Common experiences and shared new experiences. You all get to an anchorage at the same time and get to explore together, which can be a lot of fun.
Not as much competition as the America's Cup, though, I'm hoping.
Not even close.
Not at all. Another plus or benefit is, you know, if there is a problem or something like that, there's, you know, 200 people that can help troubleshoot. And there were a lot of different little things that had happened to other boats along the way. And it was always surprising, you know, there was always someone there that would come over and offer free services to just help out other people.
Chances are any problem we run into is something that one of the other folks have seen before.
What sorts of problems did you run into? Inevitably, you got mechanical parts on this boat. What happened? What was the worst thing that happened?
We fortunately didn't have any mechanical problems. The only problems that we had were with our sails. We had torn our sails. We tore three of our sails, which was very much a downer.
And these are really big. How tall are they?
Our mast is 42 feet, so it's about 50 feet off the water.
So we're talking a lot of fabric here.
Yeah.
That tear. So
yeah.
What caused the tear?
The tear was caused by a cotter pin on our spreader that had moved out of place and
sort of a metal fish hook that was at the exact wrong place at the wrong time.
And
did you hear the rip?
I don't remember.
I think we could hear the rip because of the wind. I think we could hear the wind.
Not over the wind.
But we could see it. We could see it happening, and it was kind of a you know, your heart just goes like, oh.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about the daily sailing operation, the sorts of tasks that need to happen on board a sailboat when you're out to sea, and how you split those up.
We just basically, it depends on who's on watch and who's not on watch, but we both know together that these tasks need to be done, and so we'll both say out loud, okay, I think we need to check the bilge, and the bilge is an underbody of the boat, and we always want to check that to make sure there's no excess of water in the bilge that
we don't have a leak.
Yeah, or something, you know, may have fallen off a fitting or something like that. So just because the boat is constantly in motion. For 3 days and three nights was our longest passage, so the boat never once stopped moving during that time. And what can happen is fittings can come loose just from the constant jiggling of the waves and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. So you both had to, with a two-person crew on a boat this size, 37 feet, when you're out to sea, when you're in passage, does someone need to be on watch all the time, or can you both kind of just put it on autopilot in some way?
You do need someone on watch all the time, and so we would take turns sleeping, and we would take turns doing all the normal day-to-day things you need to do, and so someone is always on watch.
So someone who's not on watch has to cook the meals for the other person, and usually when we would switch watches, we would then do a dead reckoning, which is where we would write down our current plot, our lat and long, and also the time and the speed that we're currently traveling and the direction. So in case any of our electronics ever failed, we would have at least a reference point to where we were last. And then from there, there's some math that you can do to actually determine where you're currently located.
Mm-hmm. At night, I imagine that to be perhaps disconcerting or spooky the first time, no land in sight and you're out and no other boats in sight and you're just in your 37-foot sailboat. Is that hard to get used to?
A little, depending on the conditions. There were a few nights that were very excitable, I guess you'd say.
Bumpy.
Slightly terrifying, slightly bumpy because, you know, the boat is moving in certain directions. And there wasn't enough light really to tell. The moon was covered or something. There wasn't really enough light to tell.
Mm-hmm. Grant, I remember when we talked first last year, you were concerned about being able to handle the boat because you'd only ever had it on, aside from some training, but on like Lake McBride in Iowa and perhaps the Great Lakes. But you were thinking about what it's like to manage affairs when things get rough in the high seas. Did you ever have that happen?
Yeah, it was sort of a non-issue. We did have some uncomfortable conditions, but nothing ever dangerous. And in those uncomfortable conditions, our boat was just a dream to sail. It was very balanced.
Describe the worst weather you sailed through.
Let's see. Well, there was some nights where the wind picked up to about 25 to 30 knots, and then the waves, obviously, on the ocean picked up to about 5 feet at 7 seconds. So you can imagine from the top of the wave to the next top of the wave, it's about 7 seconds. So you're going down and up in that amount of time. And that's probably about the worst that we saw.
You mentioned, the person not on watch is cooking the food for the other, for the rest of the crew. He's a crew of two here. Or I guess, no, there's a skipper and there's a crew of one.
Yeah.
So did you trade off or were you both skippers then?
Yeah, I mean, our skipper duties are, we're co-captains, that's what we say. So.
Okay, so you're co-captains.
Yes, yep.
What did you do for food?
Depending on the conditions, usually if the conditions are somewhat bumpy, you don't really feel like eating a whole lot. So there were some times where we just did crackers and snacks, lots of snacks. So whatever our favorite snacks are, granola bars, crackers, candy, that kind of thing. And then we also did sandwiches and fruit and
So you were both sort of seasick and
actually this time even doing the longer passages we were not seasick at all. We had kind of found a good recipe for our own seasickness prevention.
And what's that?
The recipe is I take a half of a non-drowsy Dramamine, and Grant takes a whole one, and then we drink Emergency, the drink, because I've read that, you know, if you have a lot of vitamin C and you're well hydrated, that tends to help ward off the seasickness.
So throughout the rally itself, we didn't really ever feel seasick at any point.
Mm-hmm. And did you? But we always talk about. We hear about getting your sea legs.
Yeah.
How long does that take?
More than 3 days, I think.
Anywhere from 24 hours to 48 or 72.
Everyone is different. That's the thing. Even with a seasickness, there were other people that we met on the rally that couldn't control it at all. Anything that they've tried, you know, they've tried everything and they couldn't get a handle on it.
So they were just miserable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What does it mean to have your sea legs?
It means you can start to move around inside and around your boat without getting bumps and bruises. And it means that you become, over time, less susceptible to your natural seasickness.
So if you don't have your sea legs, I go on that with any kind of waves, I'm running into things, I'm getting thrown against things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep, you can have that.
You're feeling constantly nauseous, like maybe... You want to, you know, just die.
Okay. We'll come back with more of our discussion with Grant and Denise Staskel, formerly of North Liberty. They're both native Iowans. Denise from the Dubuque area, Grant from the Cedar Rapids area. And last year at this time, they did something which, well, a lot of us, I would think, would only dream of doing, of having the courage to do. They chucked their former lives, their former routines of going off to work and coming back to a home in North Liberty. They sold their house and they bought a 37-foot sailboat called Malohia. And they have had many passages and encounters. And you can find out more about their voyage or their journey at vagabondingundersail.org. We'll put a link on our website because there's a lot of great images and great writing courtesy of Denise Staskel. But we will come back in just a moment. When we do, I want to ask you about something I read in your blog about an encounter with a fish, a skipjack. That's when we return. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.
Your tender lips to mine. The things dear that I long for all of you. Just give me a sailboat in the moonlight and you.
And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer with Grant and Denise Staskel, young couple who sold their house in North Liberty, Iowa, last year. They bought a boat. Her name is Malohia, and she is 37 feet long, and currently she's anchored off the coast. Where is she anchored, Denise?
She's actually in a marina,
she's
safe
in a marina.
And sound, in La Paz.
In La Paz. This is Mexico.
This is Baja California Sur, so it's the finger part of Mexico, yes. Mm-hmm.
In the break, you mentioned that you actually miss your boat. How can that be?
I think you develop this relationship with the boat, and you kind of, you know, you just wonder, is she okay? I know she's okay, but...
Do you have people checking on her?
Well, yeah, our neighbors down there are keeping an eye out, and she's in a marina, which is locked, and there's security there, so...
I want to have you share a little bit more of a passage from your blog. We'll put a link to that at on our River to River website at iowapublicradio.org. But your blog can be found at vagabondingundersail.org. You sold your house, you bought a boat, and you've spent the last few months, the better part of the last year, sailing in the Pacific up and down the coast, mainly Southern California down to Mexico, and having many adventures, which you write about in your blog. I was interested to ask about some of the sea life that you encountered. In fact, you've been doing some fishing, and what kind of fish were you catching, Grant?
We looked at a lot of our friends on boats were fishing, and we wanted to try it. We are not fisher
people
per se. But we thought it's worth a shot, and we might as well since we're out here anyways.
Okay. So. You have a passage. I wonder if you could read, Denise, about catching an interesting fish that you, well, may or may not want to eat, I guess.
Huh? Sure. I took the fish down below to continue with its carving. Let's see what you've been eating for dinner, fishy. I sliced open its belly and revealed its contents. Ew. Then, to the best of my crippled ability, it was my first carving, I cut fillets, wrapped them in paper, and put them in plastic Ziplocs inside the coldest part of our refrigerator. We decided to hail our friends on cake to see if they knew anything about the fish we had caught. We were advised that if this fish was a skipjack, not to eat it if we ever wanted to like fish again. Darn! I remember Sea Otter's crew saying they had also caught a mysterious fish, possible skipjack, and after filleting it and cooking it, something didn't taste right.
Okay, something didn't taste right. Actually, a dangerous fish to eat, the skipjack?
No, I don't think it's dangerous. It just is not as tasty as many other fish. So we decided after that information not to risk it.
Well, a skipjack is normally used for making canned tuna. So if you can imagine, I don't know how they process it or whatnot, but the meat inside it is very red. And the redder the meat, we've been told, the redder the meat inside the fish, the more pungent it tastes. Mm-hmm. So... We were told if we ever wanted to like fish again, don't eat it. And I do like fish. I, you know, would like to eat fish again. So,
what other sort of sea life did you encounter? I see on your blog you have pictures of dolphins and other sea life.
Yeah, dolphins are my favorite.
Would they follow the boat?
Yeah, they will follow and play in the wake of the boat, and sometimes they'll latch on and they'll be playing at your bow. So you run up to the bow and you peer your head over, and there's dolphins just playing under there, and there's just amazing creatures.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Do they sense you? Do they want contact of some sort?
I don't know if what their deal is, but I'm pretty sure they could see me in the water, they were just like playing, and I don't know. It just seemed like they wanted contact, and
it's amazing how many dolphins all in a group there are. So we would look out, and when we saw dolphins occasionally, we'd see hundreds and hundreds of dolphins swimming around, and so they.
And there's a saying, too, that dolphins are good luck. So anytime you see dolphins in a passage, that your passage will be either, you know, pleasant or something good is going to happen as a result of dolphins.
Isn't it also true that where there are dolphins, there tend not to be sharks?
Exactly. Dolphins come either to ward off sharks or they come as a result of where sharks were or something like that. I don't know.
Did you swim off your boat at any time?
Yeah, we have... when we were in Bahia de los Muertos,
yeah,
we not, swam, but
not
really,
underway.
Not
once
underway.
Once we were anchored, we'd swim around in the bay. But
when you're cruising along on the boat, what are your favorite activities on the boat?
There's always something to do. Like either just make sure the monitor wind vane that's like our third crew. It's like a self-steering wind vane. Make sure that the wind vane, which we've named Moses, is happy and is steering our boat for us. Sometimes he gets off course and you have to correct him a little bit, but he does a wonderful job steering the boat. So just making sure he's on task, and then doing the daily activities of checking where you're at, your position.
I have fun trimming the sails and making sure that we're keeping our speed up, because if you don't, a two-night passage can quickly turn into a three-night passage. So,
Denise Stayskull is with us, along with her husband, Grant Stayskull, Iowans who chucked their former life, sold their house, and bought a 37-foot sailboat and have been sailing the past few months off the coast of California in the Pacific. And this is their first time back to Iowa in a year, and we'll find out at the end of this hour what you have plans for in the future. But first of all, I wanted to ask about something in your blog, an encounter you had. We have, you know, sea creatures, things that you can bewonder, but also you want to make sure there are no threat, sharks, mako sharks, but also man-made things. You encountered somebody was conducting a missile test at one point that you encountered. What happened there, Grant?
Yeah, so south of the Channel Islands, which are just off the coast of California, the U.S. Coast Guard was conducting what they call live fire exercises, and it's basically what it sounds like. They take their heavy firepower and fire
missiles.
Live missiles and things into the water. And so before they do that, they send many, many notices out to anyone in the area saying...
How do they send the notices out? Radio?
Yeah,
via radio. They'll give you coordinates and say, this is where we are, this is what we're planning on doing, and this is when it's going to happen. We paid attention to those, but generally when you hear coordinates, you look on the map and you see that you're off to the left somewhere, you're off to the right somewhere. The one time we found ourselves dead center in the middle of their range, and so we decided that we really have to call them back and let them know. And so we ended up calling, and I don't know if it was a Coast Guard cutter, it was the ship that was actually doing the firing, called us back and said, which direction are you heading? And we said, south. And they said, okay, keep going south and you'll be fine.
they were all pleasant about it.
Yeah, they were great.
They were really great. They said, don't turn around, just keep heading south and you'll be fine.
So many experiences, and you can find out more by finding the link at iowapublicradio.org to Denise Stayskull and Grant Stayskull's blog, though we have to give credit. Denise is the writer in the family, I guess, right?
She is. That's correct.
Although Grant has expressed interest in writing, but I've said, you know, you can take on any type of blog entry you'd like as some practice time for that. So.
Grant, let me ask you about this, because you described the space that you're living in on this boat, generous length, 37 foot, but the living space inside it under the deck is as big as a small bathroom, you said, right, Denise?
No, it's more like a dorm room. It's about 10 and a half feet wide at its widest point. So it's bigger than a bathroom. It's smaller than a garage, but if you...
It's maybe half a dorm room.
Yeah, it's maybe half a dorm room.
How does sharing a sailboat over months with one other person, your spouse in this case, change your relationship? Grant, you want to tackle that one first?
It's brought us closer together in many ways. If we have a disagreement, it's an amplified disagreement.
It's amplified and it's quickly resolved. Not something you can like hang on to for a long period of time. I think the confined
What aspects amplify it and quickly resolve it that are not on land or your former lives on land?
Being in close proximity to each other.
Yeah, and
At
every waking moment. But there's nowhere to retreat. Like in a bigger house or, you know, on land, there's many separations between you and your spouse. You are at work all day, so that's 8 hours a day that you don't see each other. You sleep for another 8 hours a day, so you don't, like, interact then either. And so we're interacting a lot more than we would be if we were on land. You know, you come home from work around 5, you're probably up till about 9, you probably turn on the TV, and there is another distraction. We don't have a TV on board either. We are constantly either reading or, you know, interacting. And I think that makes it a little bit easier to, you know, have that confrontational time where you need to resolve that whatever the conflict is, versus running from it and storing it inside and then waiting until the next time to, you know, bring it up again. Or
It forces us. Was there any moment for that reason or for other reasons when it crossed either of your minds that, ooh, this is just not going to work? Any days like that? Any hours like that? Any days I said, I wish we wouldn't have done this? Now, be honest.
We never really said, I wish we wouldn't have done this, but there were days that we've questioned, are we still having fun?
Not for that reason. There were times in the middle of the night when we would tear a sail unexpectedly, or we'd have a number of things all at once happen that we'd have to deal with. And after enough of those problems
things build up and
together, we would sort of sit down and say,
are we still
do we really
fun?
Want to be out here at this moment? And we would have those moments occasionally, not very often, but when we did, they would pass quickly.
You've been married for about 4 years, but did you learn anything about Denise you didn't know before you went on this sailing journey?
Denise is very detail-oriented.
You didn't know that?
I think you knew that to some extent.
Denise is a great writer.
Yes, I can see that on the blog.
For that. And I didn't realize that, I suppose. Mm-hmm.
What did you realize about Grant that you didn't know before?
Grant is a great problem solver, troubleshooter. For instance, with anything that's happened on the boat, like if our engine is making a weird noise, just his ability to read and to come to a conclusion and to figure out and problem solve is like, it just amazes me.
Uh-huh. You knew you loved writing before this, I have to believe. Denise, did you? No?
No. I did not. I think the whole blog is kind of a like self-discovery thing for me, because I've never really written anything before. And I think over the year of writing, like I try to write at least once a day or once every week. I think I've been getting better and better at it. But I've not really.
So it's like a muscle you exercise?
Yes.
What did you discover about yourself?
I think, you know, I knew that maybe, like, if we go back to the conflict thing, like maybe I have a tendency not to be able to communicate what I want, I have a tendency not to be able to communicate fully to Grant what problems or how I'm feeling or whatnot in the exact moment that we're in conflict with each other. But I think that's been improving.
There's no way to, when you're off the coast, there's no way to call a marriage counselor.
No, right? No.
I think something that we both have learned about ourselves is that we've become much more confident in dealing with the boat. The more time we've spent at sea, the more confident we've become in our ability to sail the boat and our ability to safely get from point A to point B.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So what's out there in the future for you now? I think, if I'm recalling, the original plan was for, a half year of sailing. And you had a limit on it, or was it open-ended?
It was always open-ended.
Yeah.
And I think we may spend some more time in Mexico. Mexico has been a real treat. We've really enjoyed our time there and met wonderful people and had some great experiences. And we'd like to continue that, I think. Many of our friends are headed either for the South Pacific this year or next year, or Central America towards Panama. And so both of those two ideas we're kicking around in our minds. But.
Well, the South Pacific, you could retrace the route of the Norwegian explorer and writer Thor Heyerdahl, the Kon-Tiki. Have you seen that or read that?
We have.
Well, 1947, his expedition, from South America to prove that you could just drift on a raft over there, too. Would you go as far as the Polynesian Islands ever?
That is an that's a possibility. We won't say absolutely 100% we will go do that, but that option is there.
It's an option.
I see a certain smile on your face, Grant. Have you thought about this?
Yeah, you've talked about it? Yeah, both of us have talked about it.
That's an immense stretch of sea, isn't it?
It would be 3,000 miles.
3,000 miles. Three times the total mileage that you have so far.
Yep.
Been in the boat. What are your plans for 2014?
Well, we don't like to say plans again. It's ideas.
You told me that earlier.
But there's a couple of different options. Actually, what was really surprising to us is that in the Sea of Cortez, there are a ton of islands that I didn't even know existed. So a lot of people are saying that we've talked to, it would be a shame not to explore those and kind of like see or experience those.
I think Cousteau said the Sea of Cortez was nature's aquarium, I believe.
Yeah.
And where exactly is that?
The peninsula, the Baja Peninsula, just east of there, the sea in between that and the mainland of Mexico.
It's called the Sea of Cortez.
The Sea of Cortez.
Yeah.
Now you, I know, and many of our listeners are concerned about the environment, and we hear always news reports about the environment, you know, being sullied, polluted. You've been out there really in the ocean. What sense or what change did you have in your views on our environment off the coast of California?
I think even before we left, we always knew it was important to respect the environment and take care of it. We've seen most of the folks we've run into, we've seen that share that attitude, that both in California and Mexico, everyone is very conscious of the environment and the need to protect it. And so we haven't seen anything that different than that, I'd say. But
hundreds of dolphins you've seen, but what about garbage floating out there? A lot of that?
Not really. I mean, there was one instance where we did see balloons floating out there, other than that, there hasn't been any like garbage piles that we've run across.
We've not seen that.
But again, you know, being on this boat has kind of taught us to be more self-sufficient, and in the sense that we don't need. I mean, we can generate our own electricity. We, look at the water that we have. We have to be conscious of how much water we're using. One of the things that I found different just from coming home for 10 days is, you know, the amount of water that is just flowing out of like every faucet that we go to. It's just, I'm like, oh, a little overwhelmed by all the water.
You come back to your previous lives and you see how we're wasteful, huh?
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know if it's like super wasteful, but like, I can tell there's a difference in like how we live on the boat. As far as, you know, we're very conscious about how much water is coming out of the spigot, and especially when we're away from land, because, you know, that's all the water we have. So if we run out, we run out. And so when we're underway, we don't even use the actual faucet. We have a foot pump. So both of us foot pump our water through. So we just press a pedal. And on the floor, and the pedal creates enough suction for the water to come out the spigot, and that's kind of how we get our water out for dishes. And
you have to work for it a little. You don't just turn them.
We do, yeah. Uh-huh. Yep.
So you've said you can't wait to get back to Malohia, your sailboat, and get back to sailing. But having returned to Iowa, what do you find that you've missed the most in your 10-day visit to Iowa after being away for a year?
Our family. I think we miss
friends and family.
Yeah, we miss our families the most. But, you know, they've throughout the year have come to visit here and there. This time we came back and visited, but we hope that they will come and visit us in other fun and exotic locations as we continue this journey.
Now, we've been pointing listeners to your blog, which can be found, a link to can be found on our website. It's vagabondingundersail.org if you want to go directly there as well. You've got so many pictures there. Do you have a favorite picture you can describe for us? That you, are you also the photographer besides the writer?
Yeah, well, we are both the photographer. Okay, well, we're actually trying to get a better camera because it's all on a phone right now. It's just a cell phone camera. But my favorite picture has to be the pictures of the dolphins that I took. I mean, it was mostly video. But yeah, they were just, it was just amazing. And then the other thing is, sunsets and sunrises, they just kind of define the days, like when you're out there on passage. And so those are very significant photographs for me in general, because it just starts, it's like the start and the end of the day. And
my favorite photo was in the tiny little village of Turtle Bay on the coast of the Baja Peninsula, where it happened to be Halloween, and Denise had some candy in her backpack, and there's this wonderful photo of her giving some candy to a little girl, a little local girl.
Oh, yeah,
there.
She was sitting on the step.
It was a great moment.
Mm-hmm. So this could go on for several years, a lifetime?
Well, as long as it's fun.
As long as it's fun. That's what we keep saying.
Well, I want to wish you all the best in your sailing. Denise and Grant Staskel, formerly of North Liberty, and two landlubbers who have turned into seafarers. How does that feel? That must feel great.
Wonderful.
It does. There's a sense of freedom there.
Okay. Denise and Grant, thanks for coming in. We wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Technical support from Dennis Reese. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Catherine Perkins. Podcasting and on-demand audio available at iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music is written and performed by the River Monks. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.